The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas, for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, a quick note about ads from us, your hosts. We are picky about our advertisers and all of our partners or brands or products that we either use ourselves or that we think our audience would benefit from knowing about. Working with advertisers is what allows us to make this show, and they keep working with us because you, our listeners, use the unique links and codes they provide. It's one of the most meaningful ways to support what we do. So thanks for that. We're really, really grateful. If you're ever looking for a specific code, head to athingortwohq.com/sponsors and you'll find them all. Okay, here's the show.
Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. To share your thoughts on this episode or anything really, leave us a voicemail at 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at athingortwohq.
And join our Geneva for all the chatter and bonus, you know, deep dives from other A Thing or Two listeners.
Other A Thing or Tours.
That's right.
Name TBD.
Name TBD.
I feel like we're going to have a name resolved by the time this comes out, and that's going to be a thrill.
I think we are too. I thought of another one.
What?
Tuners. Because
Tuners.
Because G-Thanks just bought it. They call themselves Geezers, which I thought was so good.
I think that's a good
really
one too.
It's really good.
Yeah. You know what else is really good? The sausage race.
Yeah.
As a metaphor. Mm-hmm. The sausage race is a metaphor.
Yeah.
So we have discussed on previous episodes the idea of like sausage races that happen mostly at baseball games. Mm-hmm. In like, okay, the most basic form of this is ketchup versus mustard versus relish, right? The elevated, sophisticated version is the Milwaukee Brewers famous racing sausages. When I was confirming the name and landed on their section of the MLB.com website,
It's sanctioned by the MLB. It's official.
It's like registered. Okay. It's registered. It also had the sausage race results listed. Updated through October 1st, 2023, which we can just assume was last season.
Right.
are last season's end of season results for the racers. Brat, 19 wins.
Okay.
Chorizo, 10. Hot dog, 15. Italian sausage, 17. Polish sausage, 20. And I think when you read these results, right, you're like, oh, well, I would root against chorizo then as a result because chorizo has 10. Everybody else has done significantly better. But what the sausage race tells us is that you just don't fucking know.
You never know. That is
you
the classic.
Never know.
It's always, you know, someone's kielbasa's in the lead and then kielbasa trips. The hot dog comes ahead. Then the brats all of a sudden out of nowhere was in third place the whole time. And then at the last minute pulls ahead and wins. You just never
this
know.
This is the thing. You just never know, which is all of life pretty much like all of life. But there are so many specific experiences that just feel like sausage races, just like truly feel like sausage races.
When you first brought this up as a metaphor for life, the most obvious thing to me was politics. Because how many people have we had to like learn their names and heights and wives styles? I could not remember Ron DeSantis's name when I was trying to.
You were like that Florida man. And I was like
the Florida governor.
The Florida man? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ron DeSantis, I couldn't remember his name. It was like all anybody could talk about for a couple months. And now because he wore lifts in his cowboy boots, we're never going to have to talk about him again.
I was driving around recently and saw, not in New York, the first Nikki Haley front lawn sign. I was like, oh my God, it's the Nikki Haley voter. There they are, like at that house. We should interview them and be like, what? And maybe it's a relative. I don't know. Who can say?
No, I mean, but Donald Trump is the true sausage racer, or at least my experience of Donald Trump in 2016, where I was just completely refused to even like read past a headline about him because I was like, this is not happening. And then lo and behold, It was happening.
You also did a great job. I think Pete Buttigieg is a perfect kielbasa. You know, just a perfect.
Yeah. No.
I
didn't want to make this specifically a Republican problem.
It's agnostic. Yeah. It is agnostic.
Also dating, you know, our babysitter has been dating multiple men at once. And as a bystander, it's a total delight to try to keep track of all of them and watch who pulls ahead. Valentine's Day was last week and she was going out with one. And I was like, wait, that's the one you're going out with on Valentine's Day? I thought he was like in last place. But listener, he was the one who asked for a date on Valentine's Day. So he was the one who got the Valentine's Day date. And I was like, this is what happens. It's not because he's the fastest. He's the best. He just asked for the date on Valentine's Day. You know, that's what happens.
I do know. I feel like job hunting is like another prime example where you have you're interviewing for five different roles. And then the one that goes so well that you're like, that was sick. I like nailed it. They ghost you.
Yep.
And then the other one, you're in the like process for 3 months. It's just.
Yes.
You just and never
then,
know.
And you thought you were never going to get, you didn't hear from them for a month. And then the person who they originally asked decided they didn't want to move because they couldn't find the right schools for their kids. So now the job is yours.
Sausage race.
It's a sausage race.
The other one you called out is award season, Oscars.
I mean, poor things. Who knew Emma Stone would be standing up, sitting down, standing up, racing to this award stage constantly? I didn't know. I didn't know poor things was the thing.
The ultimate sausage race Oscars moment
Yeah.
is La La Land Moonlight moment.
Oh my gosh.
That was when
Great
you thought.
Call. Great
that
call.
Was when you really thought you knew the winner of the sausage race. And yet again, a trip and fall.
Wow.
Like, truly, they ate it.
That was it. Now Oscars can never shake its reputation as a sausage race. As long as we're at the grocery store.
This is a grocery episode. We're just walking through the aisles. Walk through the aisles with us.
So we had a snow day last week. It actually wasn't a snow day, but in preparation for it, I went to get mini marshmallows at the grocery store. And I also want to caveat, like, I live in Brooklyn. We don't have the big grocery stores that have everything. It's a good grocery store, but it's not the one where you're finding every flavor of everything. There has nonetheless been some very important innovation in the marshmallow aisle that has made its way all the way to our mini Brooklyn grocery stores. And I wanted to share. There is something now called a stacker. It's a flat marshmallow. Custom engineered for a s'mores.
I think stacker is a terrible name. I think that there's so much potential to do better than that.
Interesting. Did you have some thoughts?
Well, I haven't given this a lot of thought, the naming, but I think that like there's something about it being like a little marshmallow mattress or something or like a comforter.
Interesting.
Like if we're going to make it a blankety kind of stacker, a stack is, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
You should know the package that I saw in the grocery store was called stackers. On the internet, they're all called stacker mallows. So that's worse. I agree. I think they should own stackers. But what I'm guessing happened is that Jet Puffed, who is the maker of the stacker, ran into some copyright problems. And so they've now transitioned to Stacker Mallow.
Here's what I'll say. The people who came up with the name Jet Puffed weren't going to do better than Stacker. You know?
Yeah, no, that's right. The obvious question about a stacker is how well does it roast, right? Yeah. Because a marshmallow fits very well on a spear that then goes into the fire. There's enough depth that you could stick a spear through it, but it's then you still have the issue of, is it too thin? Is it like cooking too quickly, right? Because you're never going to get the like crispy on the outside, gooey on the inside.
I think that's right. I think you're losing this. There's the surface area to volume ratio change it. It's like a different, exactly. It's a different. There's way too much surface area all of a sudden. So you're getting only crispy, not squishy. Also,
well, it's a difference between like making a pancake and a cake or something, you know?
And it's like when you think of burgers, right? Yes. When you do like a smash burger versus a regular burger, like what kind of consistency are you going for? All crisp or no?
Right. Well, this was what was interesting. So there's actually directions on the bag that tell you to construct the s'more, wrap it in foil, and then grill your foil packet, which is obviously bullshit. And I feel like them really trying to sneak away with something, like just trying to get away with it. I'd like to read you some of the Amazon reviews because, as I said, I have not tried this myself. So here's what the people are saying. As far as marshmallows go, they taste fine. Toasting them is interesting. At first glance, it makes good sense. Well, not exactly. The rounded shape of the quote unquote traditional marshmallows is more suited to toasting, if that's what you want. I don't think the square thin shape of this marshmallow was designed for toasting. And I like my s'more with a hot toasted marshmallow melting its way through the chocolate. Precisely.
Thank you. Thank Precisely. You.
Someone else said, I love frozen marshmallows. It's the dessert I like to eat. These flat ones are perfect because they don't stiffen and stay tasty when frozen. Who saw that coming?
Great. That's a great use case for these. For all seven people who like frozen marshmallows, they now have this product.
I was going to say that a frozen marshmallow had never occurred to me, but I do like s'mores ice cream or like Rocky Road ice cream. And I do think the sort of frozen marshmallow in there is good. So I'm not going to read you verbatim all of the Amazon reviews, but the consensus seems to be that they work if you are looking for a microwave s'more, but not otherwise. So nice try, Jet Puff. It was a good idea in theory.
Thank you so much to Nutrafol for sponsoring this episode. If you are a regular listener of this show, you probably know that we will not shut up about Nutrafol. They have been a partner of ours for years and years, and we've had just so many conversations with people where we've been like, oh, you need to try this. Oh, this is a thing you're dealing with. You're dealing with hair thinning. Now is the time to try Nutrafol. And in all of these conversations, we've had that realization of just how common this is. It turns out that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women. And if you are among them, you are not alone. Hair thinning is so normal, but it's just not talked about and it can feel lonely and frustrating. And that is why we are so on board with encouraging everybody to join over 1 million people who are doing something about it with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Everyone's root causes of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas that are tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, such as postpartum and menopause, as well as different lifestyles, such as plant-based diets. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. Take their hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com for personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code A Thing or Two. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code A Thing or Two. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code A Thing or Two.
Hey, I'm Molly Sims.
And I'm Emma Shigormley.
We are two best friends with one common obsession.
Beauty.
And by that, we mean everything that makes you look
and feel
beautiful. We tried it all and we've got your back. We'll be calling on all our favorite health experts, industry insiders, and friends to answer all your beauty questions. Consider us your beauty 411 and sometimes your 911.
From how to fix brassy hair
to the pros and cons of laser facials,
and always with a cocktail in hand.
Always. So be prepared to be obsessed. Check out Lipstick on the Rim wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, the other thing that they had that I didn't need an Amazon reviewer to tell me this was bullshit. I didn't even look at the Amazon reviews. Lucky Charm marshmallows. But I would be psyched if it was just the marshmallows from Lucky Charm cereals. No, they're just normal jet puffed marshmallows. And yes, I am using that as a verb, as if
it's a thing.
That's right. They're just normal marshmallows in the shape of the Lucky Charm marshmallows. They're the same size.
The rainbow, the heart, the horseshoe, whatever.
Yeah, they're the same size as regular marshmallows, are the same consistency as regular marshmallows. They're the same flavor. And I hate this because the whole thing about a Lucky Charm marshmallow is that it is dry, it is solid as a rock, and then it gets that weird slimy coating when you put it in milk that does not resemble a traditional marshmallow at all. But
it has nothing to do with a marshmallow. It's a completely separate flavor. It's a completely separate experience. It is not a marshmallow.
I don't know the point of it.
I can remember the innovation of like just the marshmallows from Lucky Charms. And for me, that experience was at Cereality in Chicago, which we have somehow managed to talk about on this podcast before in 2011.
You did love that place.
Yeah, 21. Because you could make your own cereal combos and you could add Lucky Charms marshmallows to any combination, which
is very college dorm coded.
Extremely. You can buy the bag of just magical marshmallows. That's how they're branded. If you click that.
But they're
there.
Not.
They are affiliated with Lucky Charms. Oh, yes.
Oh, it's a general.
People use them a lot for baking.
Yes. That
like
makes
if you
sense
want that on like a cupcake or something.
That makes total sense to me.
they also, and God bless that we're being timely, so rare for us, they also sell a lot of limited edition, like St. Patrick's Day magical marshmallows.
Right, because this is a leprechaun cereal.
Right. Like, of course that makes sense when you say it aloud. Of course they do St. Patrick's Day. It just didn't really occur to me that Lucky Charms was trying to present as actually Irish.
They're Irish like Io Debris. Who do you think is more Irish?
It's a tie for sure.
It's for sure a tie.
God, Lucky Charms should really pay her to be a spokesperson. That would be a incredible, true stroke of St. Patrick's Day genius.
It really would be. Maybe they're on it. We don't know.
It's too soon. God, too I can't soon. Wait. One more week and we find out, basically.
The other thing that was in the marshmallow aisle at the grocery store were these, what Jet Puff calls bits.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they are just small, dry marshmallows, which they bill as, and first of all, they're
like the one that come in like the Swiss Miss cocoa packets.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
I think they're probably best for baking. They're described as a delicious and bite-sized versatile dessert topping. Our vanilla marshmallow bits deliver the classic sweet marshmallow taste you know and love with a deliciously chewy texture, which I thought was excellent flourish of copywriting because they couldn't just say stale, which
stale.
Is what
stale.
Stale by design.
Stale. Yeah. Intentionally. So purposefully stale.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also get upset about them branding them vanilla flavored. I'm just like, that's just, they're just marshmallow flavored.
They're marshmallow flavored marshmallows is what they are. They don't have any vanilla in them. There's no chance it's vanilla involved.
No, I have to say, like, I love Rice Krispie treats. I love s'mores.
Same.
I love a classic shitty marshmallow or just like, you know, like a class. I even love Fluffermanutter, which I haven't had in years.
Yes. Yes.
I love it all. I've never been into a restaurant serving me a homemade fancy strawberry marshmallow.
Thank you. I put this on the list of things
to
discuss.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
No, this is important because it's the sort of thing I want to like, you know, where I'm like, wow, someone put so much care and effort into this beautiful thing that has like a cardamom chai flavor that is so much more interesting and complex than what I'm getting. It is for me the same as like homemade mayo.
Yeah. Yep.
Where and you're ketchup. Like, this might be really delicious, but it's not the thing I'm craving. It like isn't, it's like, it is like circling the itch that I'm trying to scratch and it makes it worse.
I agree. And it yes, completely. So, okay. I'm in LA. I was at our reporting live from Vicenni Foods as we do regularly now.
Monthly. We like monthly share Vicenni Foods updates, sometimes featuring Nancy Meyer, sometimes not.
Oh my God. Also, Eric, it's their 75th anniversary this year. There's new window paint up for it. It's so beautiful. I'm so happy for them.
Is there new merch?
No, but we went to In-N-Out and it's also their 75th anniversary. And I was like, of course, these two classic Los Angeles institutions were born the same year.
Was that the best year for Los Angeles?
I think so. I think it's when LA found its identity.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway, at the checkout counter, at the checkout aisle, they had Hello Kitty marshmallows. And they're all fruit flavored. And I just want the normal marshmallow flavor. The thing that pulled me in was one, I knew we were going to be doing this segment and I felt duty bound to report on
it. Yeah, of course.
But two, there's jelly in the middle, which I was like, that could be good. So it's like, there's mango flavored jelly, there's strawberry flavored jelly with, you know, and the marshmallow itself.
It's like haichu flavors inside of marshmallows.
Yes. And I wish it was more of a haichu consistency, but it's really just more of like a jelly consistency. And it was just all too much. It was all too sweet for me. Not even Cam was that jazzed about it, to be honest. I mean, I think he liked it. He would eat it because it's sweet, but he didn't seem enthused.
Taken with it.
No.
Taken with it.
No.
The thing I wanted to talk about in this marshmallow segment that also is pat on the back to us, more timely than usual.
Yes.
Peeps.
Mm, yes.
How do you feel about Peeps?
Not, unless I'm deep into a sugar addiction, I'm not going for a Peep.
Yeah. I like a Peep because, you know, a sugar crust on a thing for me is like a pretty satisfying, and the cute animal nature of it I find to be appealing.
Yes.
The thing I have found unappealing about Peeps is that at some point in recent years, they really decided they were not Peeps that sell marshmallows around Easter. They were a capital B brand.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Sour Patch Kids.
Like Sour Patch Kids. And God, like, it's almost hard for me to hear that because Sour Patch are so beloved to me that
I'm
willing to grant them like a little more leeway. You know, you and I walked into the Sour Patch Kids store on University at some point when that existed.
You got some bad news the other day and I came over to your house and I pocketed a single Sour Patch Kid from Cam's Halloween stash and forgot to give it to you. So now I've just been following, like walking around in my coat pocket with a single wrapped Sour Patch Kid, which, you know, when I see you again.
They individually wrapped
Individually wrapped. one Sour Patch Kid, which I can't wait to give to you when I finally remember.
I know it's not our job to save the environment by recycling. I think it is our job to save the environment by not single wrapping
a single Sour Patch Kid. Yeah. But also like perfect serving size.
No, totally. Wow. So
okay,
I looked
back to Peeps.
So back to Peeps. Uh-huh. So per Wikipedia, they were originally promoted primarily at Easter. Peeps have subsequently been marketed as always in season, quote, in quotes, always in season. It's like always on marketing, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. like always. No.
Yeah.
So if you would like to know when Peeps decided they had to go with this, like so fucking hard, it was 2009. They started releasing lip balm in 2009. From there, they quickly made their way to such things as golf gloves.
Oh my God.
There's a dog
rope. I feel
like
they were ahead of the game in marketing nostalgic millennial products in this way.
I think that's right. I think, unfortunately, the Peeps, like, color stories and all of it, it's a lot. It just mm-hmm. is, like, a lot. There's, like, a lot of merch that is sold at Target and stuff that says, hang in with my Peeps, and it has mm-hmm. pictures of all the Peeps. There are now Dr. Pepper flavored Peeps.
Gross.
Like just like so many flavored Peeps. Dr. Pepper is a flavor that it only should be applied to lip smackers.
They should have the exclusive license on non-soda Dr. Pepper products.
Exactly. Peeps is owned by a company called Just Born Quality Confections.
It's really good.
Which I could think about for days. Because baby animals. Because that's the brand. They're like, we make baby animals.
Okay, since we're full of great marketing ideas right now, they've got to do an Ann Geddes calendar. Right?
You know who could do this, Claire? There.
Yeah.
This could be us. We could do it because Racine Art Museum holds the annual International Peeps Art Exhibition.
Oh, wow. Wow.
200 artists from around the country create pieces for this collection. This year will be its 15th year, so it's only 60 years younger than San Vicente Foods. Which aligns perfectly with this brand refresh. Like that is when, you know, that is about when the cycle we are talking mm-hmm. about. 2009 is mm-hmm. when this started happening. It's definitely officially sanctioned.
Okay.
For some reason to me, it makes a lot of sense that it's in Racine, Wisconsin, in mm-hmm. the same way that it makes sense to me that the Mustard Museum is in Middleton, Wisconsin, that I went to recently.
I agree. I think there's something about Wisconsin's relationship to sort of like gimmicky concept-y food stuff like Cheesehead and the cheese hat from, you know.
If
like
you're willing to wear a cheese head to a sporting event, you'd probably also be willing to make a Peeps art for a museum show.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the issue for me is that this is art that is made from or inspired by Peeps. Mm-hmm. I think personally it should have to be made from Peeps.
1,000%.
Inspired by it to me is not doing it. Mm-hmm. It should be a lot more like the Odyssey of the Mind Balsa Wood Bridge project.
Mm.
You know, like mm-hmm. this is your assignment. You're given 3 dozen Peeps. Go.
Or as discussed on a previous episode, the Design Within Reach champagne chair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, there are a lot of children participating in this, so I understand these rules might feel strict.
Okay.
But again, Odyssey of the Mind involved children.
Yep.
What else I need to tell you about Peeps? Two things to go back to previously discussed topics. One, soda. Pepsi has a Peeps-flavored soda. Pepsi X Peeps. Food and Wine
that
wrote...
That sounds so disgusting.
It really does. Food and Wine wrote about it last year. We're not sure if it's coming back this year for Easter or not. It's too soon
in
the cycle.
Does it taste like cream soda? What did they say about it?
I think that's a really good guess. Food and Wine wrote, yes, everyone knows it should have been called Peepsy.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Peeps cereal now, which does not feel respectful to Lucky Charms.
Not at all.
At all. Like,
wow. Really marching on someone else's turf. It doesn't look good.
No, it looks like Fruit Loops with marshmallows. Although God knows what the flavors are.
Right. Thank you for exposing me to this. I am deeply fascinated by this company's decision to go so hard. Can you talk to me about the Peep Sheet?
I can talk to you about the Peepshi. Peepshi is Peeps sushi.
I was like, what does this mean? Okay.
I don't know how you would know from the word Peepshi that it was sushi. Like, I don't know who thought that mm-hmm. was going to translate in any way.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the conversation we had about like how little appetizer skewers are having mm-hmm. a moment and how people are going to fuck that mm-hmm. up and they're going to start putting candy straws on skewers and whatever. They are. They're taking it one step further and making Peeps sushi. So In terms of ingredients, mm-hmm. I want to lay this out for you. Mm-hmm. Peeps are ostensibly the fish. I guess makes sense as they're animals. I don't know. The Rice Krispie Treat stands in for rice.
Okay. Right. Well, I appreciate some attempt at authenticity there because, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fruit by the Foot
mm-hmm.
is nori. It gets cut into strips to wrap.
Mm-hmm. 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 Honestly, and it then, sounds kind of good. I would be delighted by
listen,
this.
Listen, listen. This I kind of thought was a stroke of genius. Nerds are the row.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absurd. I'm just scrolling through. They're like cutting up the peeps to be look
inside.
More like fish. Yeah. And they have all sorts. They've got, like you said, the row, like in a roll form. Mm-hmm. And they've got...
There's nigiri. Like, there's really, like, a lot of ways to play it.
Yeah. I can't imagine ever doing this, but I'm quite charmed by it.
There's something a little upsetting about watching someone cut the head off the peeps that I can't quite explain. It's the just born of it all or something.
The one that I'm upset with is the one that looks like sea urchin. The, like, orange, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I understand.
I don't think we need to try to approximate that with an orange. But other than that, you know, I'm pretty into this. And it is so rare that I am into something like this, but I'm here for it.
It's better than the skewer, for sure.
It is. It is.
Thank you so much to Fast Growing Trees for sponsoring today's episode. I don't know when this happened, but at some point over the last couple of years, some of my favorite e-commerce shopping has become tree, plant, seed shopping. And among my favorite sources in the whole world for this is Fast Growing Trees. I was browsing the other day because we have a planter that clearly needs a new plant. And basically, I've narrowed it down, I think, to a triple crown blackberry or an emperor Japanese maple. We'll see what happens. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? If you don't have outdoor space, there are plenty of options for house plants. You can grow a lemon, an olive, an avocado, or a fig tree inside on top of a wide variety of windowsill kind of plants. Fast Growing Tree makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped direct to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their over 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. The experts at Fast Growing Tree curate thousands of plants so you can find the perfect fit for your specific climate, location, and needs. And you don't have to drive around to nurseries and big garden centers and lug all these dirt things in and out of your car. It is just a wonderful experience all around. Right now, they have some of the best deals online, like up to half off select plants. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code ATHING at checkout. That's an additional 15% off fastgrowingtrees.com using the code ATHING. ATHING at checkout. FastGrowingTrees.com, code a thing. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
You know, we can't escape this without making mention of the MMX marshmallow crossbow that we included in last year's gift guide. It is a very legit, scary looking crossbow that is specifically designed to launch marshmallows at people.
It doesn't look like it's fucking around. That's for sure. Can we move on to fruit?
Yeah, I can't believe how many things we said about marshmallows that feel relevant to this conversation about
branding.
Branding and marketing. In fruit and marketing and like crossbreeding.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you had some Valentine's Day shopping to do at Eataly, which mm-hmm. I accompanied you for because it was before a meeting. And they were selling these pale pink strawberries called pineberries.
Pineberries. And I had told you I had encountered them before on the internet. Farm to People was selling them. And I was intrigued and had not tried them. But they had been marketed as, yes, being pineapple flavored strawberries ostensibly. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And they're sort of like white to pale pink.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you know, color wise, you're like, ooh, what's that?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so you said, you know, did you think Cam would like them? And I was like, sure, why not? We'll see. You know?
Yeah.
So you got it for him.
So I got him some pine berries and his reception was interesting.
Well, you and I both overlooked what to him was the most important part of the Pineberry, which is that there is a fairy on the label. And so he was immediately intrigued and psyched and ate 7 in one sitting and said, and I quote, "Does it turn you into a fairy or is it just a logo?"
Which is like, honestly, the question of every product. Like, when you buy bronzer, does it turn you into a fairy or is it just a logo? You
know, it's like, true. It's true. Like, it's an important life question. And I truly believed when I was younger that the bronzer turned you into a fairy. And I think growing up is realizing that it's actually just a logo. That is maturity. It's entirely unclear to me what the fairy has to do with the product, other than maybe she like tapped her wand on the strawberry and turned it into a pineberry.
I think we should go with that. I thought the pineberries were fine. I thought that they didn't taste special.
No, they taste. And then once you realize they taste like underripe strawberries, you're like, they actually kind of look like underripe strawberries. Are these just underripe strawberries?
Right. I do think that is a problem that is posed by the pineberry.
Because you taste it and you're like, it's kind of tart. I guess it's tart in the way that pineapple is tart. And then you're like, but it's also just tart like an underripe strawberry and it's pale like an underripe strawberry.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah.
Are these just strawberries we're picking early? Is the question of pineberries. Ask the fairy. Who would know if not that fairy?
Here's what I say. I don't think that they've been like crossbred with a pineapple. I don't think that's what's happening.
It's not the impression I got eating them, certainly. I did use them in this Marcella Hazan recipe for macerated strawberries with balsamic vinegar, which you basically cut up some strawberries, sit them in sugar for an hour, and then add balsamic at the end. And it was quite delicious. And a really like the sort of recipe you would use for underripe strawberries where you're like, yeah, they're not great. So this is the perfect answer.
A recipe you have been making since college, because I remember you had me and Justin and Aliza over and you made that for us. And it was delightful and felt incredibly sophisticated. Yeah. To the barbecue house. Yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't with pineberries back then.
No,
pineberries had been introduced.
Well, I also wasn't spending $8 to be like, ooh, maybe.
I mean, listen, we ate them all. We liked them.
Totally.
We just have our suspicions. Yeah. And we can't get out of this conversation without talking about sumo oranges.
No, absolutely cannot.
Which are a great orange. I'm not going to, you know.
I think they're an especially good orange.
Yeah.
I think, okay, here's my thought on a sumo orange. One, they're delightfully easy to peel, which for me is like potentially the most important feature that an orange can have. Number one characteristic, easy to peel. There's something about the texture of the flesh of the like fruit that is like different and nice and like softer.
Yes.
Like I can't explain it. Does that make sense?
I agree with you about this. And I think that they are a superior orange. The one thing I will say, and I don't mean this as a neg, is that I think a lot of the hype around it, I think people are expressing so much adoration for the taste when in fact, I think that the peelability is going a really long way.
Of course.
I think that's half of it. But I do agree that they are consistently a very good orange.
Yes.
Delightful tasting orange.
I also appreciate that while the name is absolutely marketing and the way that all of these names is marketing, I think it actually genuinely captures the shape.
Oh, yeah.
Like it looks like
the
a sumo wrestler.
It has a little bun on top.
Hat on top. Yeah, it's either the bun. Yeah, exactly. It's either the bun or the head on the body. Like either way, you know, it's like it takes two forms.
It's like the bird of paradise, which is the wing, you know, where you're like, is it the bun? Is it the head? I don't know. It's up to the side. Okay, here's the history of sumo oranges. This rare seedless variety was originally cultivated in Japan in the 1970s by a grower who set out to develop the ultimate citrus experience. This
ultimate citrus experience is so pre-Museum of Ice Cream. Anyway, go on.
The entire sumo citrus website, I'm like, did you hire a pentagram for this? And they might have. They may well have. This variety was dubbed the Daikapon in Japan and has been prized by those in the know ever since. Seedlings were first imported into the U.S. in 1998, but because the sumo citrus is one of the most challenging varieties to grow, it wasn't until 2011 that they became available to the public. After many years, we are now lucky enough to enjoy sumo citrus in the United States thanks to our dedicated farmers in California who maintain incredibly high growing standards. And throughout the website, they do give a lot of credit to the farmers because they're like, these are difficult to grow. It's a delicate situation and you got to get it just right. Which
I like that. I like that. Yeah.
Everything you need to know about how much marketing goes into something like this is summed up by this from their website. Sumo Citrus partnered with Hypebeast to tell the origin story of the world's most loved fruit.
No.
There's an entire manga retelling of the history of Sumo Citrus in partnership with Hypebeast. I just think it's perfect that Sumo Citrus is the Hypebeast of citrus. Of course it is. There's an entire fan section of their website, which I also love. They're like, fandom is happening. Fandom is a thing. Why not us?
Why not us? Why not us? I think they're kind of right. Why not them? That's like, I think actually the biggest problem with Sumo Citrus for me is they're kind of right about all of it.
For sure. I can't, it's really hard to like give them a hard time because you're like, the product is good in every way.
And you're like sort of getting, you sort of understand what's happening and you're not wrong.
I don't mean to submit as a hot take that I don't like peelable oranges and that it's not great, but I do think that the premium orange consumption experience is actually sliced because then you're not getting any flesh, any pith.
Yeah. You're meaning like eating it off the rind.
So you're slicing it into discs and then cutting the discs in half. Because then your mouth is only coming into contact with pure flesh. Pure like pulp.
Yeah, I understand.
Not
I understand.
The pith. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like touching the wet orange as much. Mm-hmm. I prefer the dry orange membrane.
I just think you're not. I'm thinking about
you're
it.
Really like making sure you use the right words to express this very
it's complicated
complex.
For me, and I feel pretty strongly about it. And this, while everybody else was making sourdough during the pandemic, I was getting really into the optimal way of slicing an orange.
Totally.
And
totally,
a grapefruit.
Totally. Totally.
Anyway, somebody submitted as a thingy recently, raspberry oranges. And I was like, never heard of it. Amazing. And then someone else responded and was like, no, ma'am, that's a blood orange by a different name.
Do you think we don't use blood orange because of like blood diamonds and things? I think that's how we're transitioning away.
No, I was like, oh, that's clever marketing because yeah, somebody's like, oh, a raspberry flavored orange, fun. I sampled a blood orange the other day at a farmer's market with this context in mind. And I was like, you know what? There is kind of a raspberry flavor to this. And then I was like, well, were blood oranges always kind of raspberry flavored? And then somebody clever was like, let's market them as raspberry oranges. So from what I could gather, Kings River Packing, which is a produce, primarily citrus company, owns raspberry oranges as their thing.
Yeah. Okay.
They bill it as a more pleasing alternative to the typical blood orange. I think it's just a blood orange. I think it's just a blood orange.
It is just a blood orange.
Okay. I think so. Yeah.
Why? I think blood orange should clap back. And mm-hmm. I think that they should take their brand in more of a liquid death direction.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
Like gothic packaging. Mm-hmm. Like this is like the bloodiest fucking produce on the market.
Yeah. No, this is
hardcore. This, if you're hardcore, you eat blood oranges.
That's right. This is for tough people and murderers. Yeah. Dexter is not still on. They could have done a Dexter brand collab.
All your favorite murderers eat blood oranges.
That's right. Cotton candy grapes.
Cotton candy grapes, pink lemons. There's just a lot of marketing happening and it's really hard to know what is a new fruit, what is an old fruit by a new name,
what's been created for the TikTok generation.
All of it. I think we need to come up with a term for what this is all is. I think we should accept submissions on it. I only have two thoughts so far, but we can brainstorm here as well. Berry Berry Tricks.
Which is the name of
which is a play on Berry Berry Kicks, unfortunately.
Oh, Kicks. Yeah. Okay.
Cutie Fruity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we can do a lot better. These are just like wheels turning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, all of this is just some form of like genetic modification on a very like simple level. Sumo Citrus has in their FAQs, is this a non-GMO food? And has a whole explanation of why it is still non-GMO, even though it is clearly a genetically, it's like a fascinating thing because it's like produce enthusiasts who are by and large, you know, the Venn diagram of produce enthusiasts and organic
non-GMO,
enthusiasts is basically a circle. So all of these products that are like by definition genetically modified to be new and unique and interesting have to figure out their way around this.
Yeah, totally, 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 totally.
We haven't done the ice cream beat in a while.
And no, and we should. We should.
Not,
this is a good update you had.
Grocery episode when
New
York Times had a very upsetting to me article about about how chocolate chip ice cream, specifically vanilla chocolate chip ice cream,
is falling out of flavor.
And I like the finger wag you're doing right now about this. Yeah, keep going.
I'm so upset. I've kind of known that chocolate chip was falling out of flavor for a while because I haven't seen it. And also...
I need to rest my weary head. Okay, I'm back.
Yeah. Because one, you really don't see it at the ice cream parlor, but it's also harder to find in the ice cream section. It's not as big of an issue for me. I haven't had to talk about it on the podcast because I don't reach for it as frequently, but it was
sure. A
staple of my childhood ice cream consumption was Häagen-Dazs chocolate chip. So the New York Times says that the chocolate chip has been losing ground to flavors with more stuff like cookies and cream and chocolate chip cookie dough. Chocolate chip no longer makes the top 10. It is now sold only in selected markets or at certain times of year, according to major manufacturers.
What are the times of year that they think people want chocolate chip?
I guess what's like summer?
It's not always on. It's not always on like Peeps. That's for sure.
Yeah. How is it that Peeps are more available than chocolate chip ice cream? It's absurd.
Let's get chocolate chip ice cream flavored Peeps on the market. I think we could make it happen.
You know that this got me so fired up because this like war between simple, beautiful, delicious, classic ice creams and ice creams with too many goodies in them is one that is close to my heart. And I fear that the wrong team is winning. Well,
yeah.
Clearly the wrong team is winning because the New York Times is reporting on it.
Well, so in the show notes, you say, I love a goodie in my ice cream. And then my note was, do you love a goodie? Like, I actually just think that's not true.
I guess it depends on your definition of a goodie because I want like one goodie. I actually like cookies and cream ice cream. That's one goodie.
Well,
that's the cookie.
The bone I have to pick with this time story is it has been losing ground to flavors with more stuff. I don't think that cookies and cream and chocolate cookie dough are flavors with more stuff.
I think those are classics. They classified this problem wrong.
I agree. What we are talking about is, you're correct. It is Ben and Jerry's versus Häagen-Dazs. And you are.
It's Ample Hills versus Van Leeuwen.
Yeah. Ample Hills is pretty much out of business at this point for the ninth time. So they've lost that bet. That battle, the battle on Ample Hill has been lost.
But it's people being like, it's a 7-layer cheesecake with raspberry compote and
a caramel core.
Yeah.
A caramel core. You got to have the core.
Yeah. But in your ice cream.
I live in a house that when they see that, they're like, perfect. And you can't actually scoop. If it has a molten core in the center of an ice cream, you're intended to eat that out of the pint. That is not for scooping. That is for sitting in front of your show with your ice cream. Yeah. I do kind of think that very few companies are doing a good job of straddling the line between this, like the simple whatever and the like too many goodies. And I think Jenny's might be the ones that have
I agree with you on that. I will say part of my issue with all these flavors, and Jenny's is sometimes guilty of this, though not always, is that the ice cream itself is almost always too sweet in these situations. They don't have the restraint of Lucky Charms.
Yeah, right, and right, right. Give us a simple base and then if you're putting a lot of goodies in, like all the marshmallows, then we must have a simple base.
And I cannot tell if they're like, well, the customer for this product also clearly has no sense of restraint, so we got to turn up the sweet. Or if they're like, in order to compete and be able to taste the ice cream at all, we must turn up the sweet. Either way, it's all too sweet. And I was surprised by this article because I thought that culturally, we were moving towards culinary trends that were more restrained. Like finding beauty and simplicity, it's all about... you know, radishes with butter and tomatoes on toast. And we're all appreciating that you don't need 17 ingredients and everything. So it's just, you know, chocolate chips in your ice cream. Simple, classic, beautiful, restrained.
I have two points to make here. Mm-hmm. One, I think one of the issues for chocolate chip ice cream is its aesthetics. I think it is not aesthetically as strong as something like radishes with butter. And so it does not meet the Instagram standards of the culture.
Okay.
Also, there was that summer, like six years ago, when raspberry chip had a moment.
Oh, do you recall? Good. Yeah, of course. You and somehow, I sampled all of them.
All of them. And against all odds, it really spoke to both of us, which is so rare for a dessert. Like that is not the thing. Mm-hmm. I do think it got the exact right type of simplicity and like complexity, right? It was like the perfect balance. It was easeful. But surprising.
Easeful strength.
peaceful strength.
Yeah.
No one could accuse it of being boring. It was beautiful, like high contrast.
And pink has been having a moment for a while. So it worked in that way too.
Totally.
The thing I want to say about Häagen-Dazs chocolate chips specifically, I'm actually going to blame all the other ice cream companies on the fact that chocolate chips aren't doing well, because a lot of times you get a weak chocolate chip, or it's not big enough, or the quality of the chocolate is not good. Häagen-Dazs chocolate chips are exactly the right size and texture, and it's a great quality dark chocolate that that sits really well against their mint. Their mint chip is phenomenal.
Unfortunately, we cannot have a conversation about mint chip on this podcast. We'll have to save it for that. I hate chocolate mint combination, especially in ice cream.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, to me, Häagen-Dazs mint chip is on par with their HDVB, with their vanilla bean. I think it's an incredible quality product. And a big part of that is the chocolate chip, because I hate a mint chip with a weak chocolate chip. And I think a lot of brands are not paying enough attention to the quality of their chocolate chip. Thus, the chocolate chip is falling out of favor.
And it's a sourcing issue.
Yes.
Okay.
And I agree. Also, this article did take pains to draw a distinction between stracciatella and vanilla chocolate chip, which I appreciated, but they actually drew the wrong distinction, which is that they said that, well, stracciatella is gelato. Fair, fine, whatever.
No, it's the way the chocolate's in it.
That's basically a chocolate flake.
Yeah.
In stracciatella. Right. That's not a chocolate chip.
It's the way that the chocolate's like poured in when you're mixing it, and it combines and flakes once you've hit a certain, you make it totally differently.
I don't want a chocolate flake in my ice.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
Totally different thing. Well, should we leave it all here?
Let's leave it all here. This is an important note to go out on. We want people to really be able to reflect upon it.
That's the show.
This has been a production of Dear Media, and we are so grateful to the talented team over there for helping us make this podcast happen, especially our wonderful producer, Olivia Mead. You can follow us on Instagram at @athingortwohq. If you have ideas for the show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingortwohq.com. Find show notes and sign up for our newsletter at athingortwohq.com. And if you love our show, you'll also want to join our Geneva. Lots of good chatter happening there.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.